Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'm with Josh and Henry as usual. And Josh, did you have a good Easter weekend?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I could have done without the snow, but that's okay. And I could have done without the first hour of the Arsenal game, but that's okay too. It all ended up just fine.
Yeah, Henry, how was your weekend? Did you have a good time?
Yeah, it was pretty good. Arsenal won. It was reminiscent of the 3-0 win against Ossesons in that first leg. But yeah, when Arsenal win, it's always much better.
Yes, yes. I do kind of delve into a pit of despair whenever Arsenal lose. It kind of just infects every other element of my life. And I'm obviously vice versa. Before we move on to boring Arsenal, Henry, let's start on a positive note. Alan Pardew has been sacked. Stoke are probably going to be relegated, and the end of anti-football momentarily is here.
I mean, it's just nice, isn't it? Stoke are just one of those nasty teams. I mean, the Aaron Ramsey incident all those years ago doesn't really help our standing with them whatsoever. And their chant yesterday didn't really help matters either. Aaron Ramsey, he walks with a limp. Funny now that we won 3-0, isn't it?
Yeah. I can't quite believe that they have the audacity to boo him.
Me neither.
It's a little bit ridiculous that you're booing a player who broke his leg. I kind of get what they're saying, like Arsenal fans probably shouldn't boo Ryan Shawcross because he was extremely apologetic. So I kind of get that. But to respond to that by booing a player who missed 2 years of his career because of a pretty shocking tackle is not the most magnanimous of responses, is it?
No,
not at all. But there we go, that's what you get if you come from Stoke. Sorry to all of our listeners, if any of them are from Stoke, I apologise greatly for that latest comment.
No, you don't. You don't have to
apologise. Yeah,
I don't. But
you're
going
down.
Josh, are you happy to see the end of Alan Pardew in the Premier League for at least until probably November, until the next mid-table club starts crashing towards the relegation zone?
I was going to say, we will never see the end of Alan Pardew. He will be back.
His dance moves will be back.
Yes, his headbutting will be back. I don't know. I always considered him to be like a really, really poor man's Arsene Wenger, because we always joke about Arsene Wenger overthinking things. I think Alan Pardew just gets lost in his own head sometimes. But I mean, I kind of would too if I just kept living the same life over and over again, failing and failing and failing. No, I'm happy to see him gone. I'm happy to see Stoke hopefully gone. And I'm still happy to see West Brom gone, because I still blame them for Serge Gnabry leaving England and probably never coming back because he got treated so poorly at West Brom. And yeah, but we'll see Pardew again. And I kind of enjoy having him in the Premier League because it gives me someone else to irrelevantly root against, because he's never relevant to anything in the Premier League. But it's still nice to see him lose.
Yeah, it's always nice to have an enemy. I did feel a little bit lost when Mourinho wasn't in the Premier League for a little bit. Kind of just wanted somebody to completely hate. But he's back and he's failing, so that's always nice. Henry, were you worried by how bored everybody was in the Emirates? I've seen a few pieces over the last few weeks talking about how apathy from the fans is actually more dangerous than anger from the fans in terms of the feeling of the club and the response that the fans will have to the state of the club. Are you growing worried by the kind of anxious to kind of just resigned feeling around the Emirates at the moment?
Possibly. And the only way I can see that changing is if we're knocked out of the Europa League, because then it would immediately revert back to anger. Otherwise, if they win, it's almost a case of we still want him to go, but perhaps the movement isn't as vociferous, if you will, in order for Arsene Wenger to leave. But it's weird. I mean, it didn't look as if there was 30,000 people there on Sunday. No. I mean, and apathy can certainly be dangerous. But then again, we want to change. And at the moment, it doesn't seem like it's going to come, whether that's on the field or off it.
No, I actually wrote a piece back end of last week, and I still believe it. I actually think Wenger's going to stay for another year. The longer this drags on, the more I think that the stubborn old man is just not going to leave. He's going to stay for another season. So perhaps apathy may be a prevalent feeling for more than just a few weeks. But certainly the Emirates, I was surprised. I thought the Emirates would be back to fairly full on Sunday, but it wasn't. It was very, very quiet.
Do you expect it to be relatively full on Thursday?
I do, yeah. There was a pretty good atmosphere for the Milan game, for the second leg in the Milan game, and I would be surprised if that isn't emulated again on Thursday. I think everybody's in the same boat when it comes to the Europa League. You know, we just want to win, and people are happy to support the team because I think they feel that the team actually has a realistic opportunity of, if not winning the Europa League, at least getting to the semi-finals and final, and then seeing what happens when you get there. Whereas in the Premier League, even at the start of the season in the Premier League, no Arsenal fan expects Arsenal to properly win the Premier League. They kind of hope for it, and they kind of think if everything falls right that they might challenge for it. Whereas the Europa League, I think, is a far more realistic proposition, and thereby people are a bit more passionate in supporting it. Josh, are you as resigned as everybody else to the, what is it, 7 games left now of the Premier League season?
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't mattered for a while, and I guess the only thing that really concerns me about the Stoke game was I had assumed that since nothing was really on the line that Arsenal would be playing free and loose and energetic, but they weren't. I mean, they kind of matched the atmosphere of the Emirates, which I understand is kind of a natural thing to do, but I don't know. I mean, I one of the reasons I was looking forward to these last handful of games in the Premier League is because of that whole no pressure, just play as you want, because there's really no repercussions. You're not going to, I mean, best case, we move up ahead of Chelsea, but you don't really get much more out of that than what you're going to get anyway. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not really concerned about it. This is what's going to be expected from a team that is all the fans expect so much more out of it that they keep failing to deliver on. I mean, if you don't deliver, your fans aren't going to keep showing up, unfortunately. But that'll change. I mean, come next year, whenever the stakes are back there, you know it'll be sold out again. It'll be full. I'm not that worried about it.
No, I think it's a temporary feeling, probably till the end of the season, and probably only in the Premier League. And it will be interesting to see what happens next year, that's for sure, especially if Wenger stays. I think, obviously, if a new manager comes in, there will be a bit of a lease of life and everybody gets behind him, but if Wenger stays, it will be quite funny, really, and it will be very interesting to see what happens as the Arsenal comedy experience continues. You touched on there, Josh, about the kind of sloppiness, I guess, and the just the really kind of lethargic performance of the team. Henry, are you concerned that may continue for the rest of the year, potentially in the Europa League or in the Premier League, or do you think it was a little bit of a one-off and as Chris says, a little bit of a kind of product of the atmosphere there?
I think that performance, while it wasn't, previous performances haven't been as bad. I think Arsenal have been or played relatively similarly to that all season. I mean, rarely can I remember a game where they were dominant or where they played slick football throughout. It was more just a case of, I was frustrated with the fact that nobody seemed to be able to string a 5-yard pass together, find space, avoid pressure. It was just very frustrating. That game itself was frustrating. What's concerning is that that's been a trend all year, and that possibly goes back to this thing of apathy, but I don't think that will be, or I hope that will not be the case in the Europa League, because the first game against AC Milan, we came out the blocks so quickly and so well. Yes, we had the dodgy first 5 minutes, but other than that, we were fantastic. It's just a case of, can we match it against CSKA, who we should theoretically beat, but we've seen in years past, Monaco being one of the most recent examples, that we're not necessarily going to beat a team that we should beat.
Yeah, it's that sharpness, isn't it, that just...
Or the killer instinct.
Yeah, it's not quite... And you're right, there have been a number of occasions where it just hasn't been there for whatever reason. I hope that... I know we've said that maybe the lack of pressure in the Premier League may help the team. I wonder if actually it might be the other way around in terms of when the game really matters, when there's actually a little bit riding on it, that kind of energizes people and kind of gives them that shot of adrenaline that they need to make sure that they're really sharp and really on their game. Certainly, like you said, in the Milan, especially the first leg, Arsenal looked kind of razor sharp. They look excellent. And I wonder if it was actually because it mattered more, not the freeing element of it mattering less. One player I probably argue was the most impressive player, and I think most people would agree with that, Josh, is that Lacazette looked, on his return, pretty decent, I think. He got about half an hour or so and obviously scored the penalty right at the end. Were you happy to see him back, and did you think that he played well?
I don't think I really could have been any happier. I mean, I really believed that his first time back on the pitch after this injury was going to be hugely telling, not just from a sharpness standpoint, but from an attitude standpoint. I mean, I never really expected him to kind of come out and look dejected and like he wanted to leave, but to see him looking so confident and so positive and so sharp, it for me, it was reminiscent of when Mesut Ozil had struggled so much to get settled at Arsenal, and then he suffered an injury himself, and I believe it was in 2014 or 2015, and when he came back, he was completely different. He was bigger and stronger, and he had his sharpness back, the Ozil that we thought we were getting at the start. And from that moment on, really, it's been no looking back. It's been that's who he is as a player, and he really took that injury time to evolve. And I like to believe that's what Lacazette did when he was gone. Is, you know, I know I've mentioned this before, but whenever he got hurt and Arsene Wenger came out and said, well, he's been struggling recently because of that injury, he really gave Lacazette a chance to just push all that off on the injury, even if it wasn't true, and start over fresh. And he really took that chance against Stoke.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, this is a bit of a contrived point, I guess, but like he just looked happy. And in all the photos and training and stuff, he looked happy, and all the players looked happy to have him back. There was a lot of kind of interaction on social media about, oh, you know, welcome back, Lacazette. It's great to have you back in the dressing room and stuff. And I do think when he went to have his surgery, it came under such a cloud, and he was so poor in that North London derby when he came on that I think just the time off and the kind of refreshing attitude that everybody's had to it, it will really help him and has really helped so far. Hopefully in the Europa League in the final 3, 4, 5 games, however many it is, depending on how far Arsenal go in the competition, hopefully he can have a real and significant impact on that team. Certainly Arsenal need him to. Josh, were you happy when Aubameyang shifted out to the left-hand side to accommodate Lacazette through the middle? Or do you think that it's not really the best way to use both of them?
Normally, I know I've been on record before saying I hate the idea and I hate that we're using a striker out wide, but honestly, if it's going to work like that, then there's no reason to be against it. I, you know, there was talk, I believe, I forget who was it, said after the game, you know, it was Arsene Wenger, actually, talked about Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang playing on the left wing when Lewandowski was at Dortmund.
Yeah.
And I thought that, you know, that's a good point, but essentially this is a step back then for Aubameyang, a step back in his career, which, if he's fine with it, if he's fine with it for the solidarity of the team, then absolutely let's do it, because clearly it works. He's almost got more space whenever he's out wide to run into the channels than he does when he's starting up front, as we saw with Ozil picking him out on that through ball. So, yeah, I'm all for it now. And if what Arsene Wenger says is true, that he's considering moving Aubameyang back out wide to let Lacazette start, then I say go for it. Those are two of your best players. However you want to get them out on that pitch, do it, because they're both needed.
Yeah, do you agree, Henry? Do you like the idea of shifting Aubameyang to the left wing?
If you want that as a defensive shape, fine. But I think if you're going forward, that he will naturally drift inside anyway. Mkhitaryan will come to the left and Ozil more towards the right-hand side so that he can cut in. As I've said numerous times, the fullbacks will offer width. So it may be a case of you look at Kolasinac more as he's the superior attacking fullback, despite the fact that Nacho Monreal has popped up with all these goals this season. That's the only thing that I would say. I mean, our formations are so complex and they're so flexible and they change so often. It's just a case of that's how it lines up on the piece of paper. But more often than not, he would come inside and they would almost play at a similar, well, in a similar area of the pitch for the most part anyway.
Yeah, I do think there is a definite lack of pace in this Arsenal team without one of Aubameyang. Essentially, you've got Aubameyang and Lacazette who are pretty sharp, and everybody else isn't really that quick. I think, you know, Ramsey, Wiltshire, Ozil, Mkhitaryan are relatively fast, but they're no burners. And if you don't have, I think having both of Lacazette and Aubameyang in that team does make a big difference in terms of the speed that Arsenal have out there, especially if one of them's out wide and one of them's in a centre forward position. I do think that does make quite a big difference. And else, you look at Manchester City, I think part of the reason why De Bruyne and David Silva have such success is because they have Sané and Sterling on either wing, and they're just rapid. It just makes the pitch so big that Silva and De Bruyne have so much space to work in central positions. I think Arsenal could kind of emulate that kind of thing with Lacazette and Aubameyang, and then Ozil and Mkhitaryan benefiting from the space that their speed provides. We talked a little bit about the sloppy passing of Arsenal. Josh, just quickly, do you think that it will continue beyond this game, or do you think do you think it was a bit of a one-off, kind of blowing the cobwebs off, as Wiltshire said, because of the international break?
I hope so. I mean, there's always random games where Arsenal spring up and just look like absolute crap, and we don't really know why, and I don't think we ever will, and I don't think anyone knows why, and I just chalk this up as one of those, because you think, I mean, yeah, there was a break, and you got to blow the cobwebs off, I guess, but then why did Lacazette look so sharp after being gone for so long?
Yeah,
I don't know. Sometimes I think it's just an excuse, and they just weren't mentally up to the game. I mean, not like it hurt them. They won the game fine. It was in the clear. But I don't know if I buy the whole you got to shake the cobwebs off kind of thing. I don't see every other team struggling after an international break. I mean, there was plenty of sharpness around the Premier League. It wasn't like everybody was rusty. It was just Arsenal.
Yep. No, I agree. The sloppy passing did lead to a number of moments of pretty good defending, however, especially from, I think, Skodra Mustafi made. I think in the first half alone, he made three or four really top-quality tackles where Arsenal were extremely stretched, and he dived in at opposing players' feet and won the ball. Henry, do you think that we saw a glimpse of the future of the centre-half position on Sunday with Chambers and Mustafi alongside one another?
I have been very impressed with Callum Chambers and his solid displays. I mean, they've all been relatively, in my eyes, I mean, I'm one of his biggest fans. For me, it was just a case of, if he lost the ball against Stoke, it was because David Ospina tried an audacious chip with oncoming pressure. I mean, for the most part, again, I thought he was pretty solid. Again, there's moments, but he's young for a centre-back still. And whilst I agree to an extent with you, Andy, that he's not necessarily the right guy to lead us like we had Sol Campbell and Torre, and it's just tough. We've got to make a decision on that position soon, and it'll have a huge effect on him, Rob Holding, Koscielny as well. That position will be addressed in the summer, and we'll have so much more clarity on it in the summer.
Yeah, I agree. I do think the time has come to commit to... essentially, you have to say, right, Chambers is our full-time starter now from starting next year, and whether he is good enough or not for that role, I don't know, but I do think the decision has now come. It's now time to make a decision on whether he's good enough or not. We'll see what Wenger thinks, and we'll see whether Chambers believes he's good enough or not. I do think he looked very good on Sunday. I thought both him and Mustafi played well. Obviously, there were major issues with both of their passing. I think you're right, Ospina did have an element to play with that, and I think it's slightly unfair to pick out anybody just because the team was so bad in general in terms of moving the ball at speed and with accuracy, but I think neither of them passed the ball well, but defensively they were very good.
Yeah, and that was a surprise to me, is that usually Callum Chambers is so good on the ball. That's one of the reasons he's in the team. It's one of the reasons why he played on the left hand side. It's usually when they're lined up as such that Mustafi plays on the left and he would be on the right. But I think it just shows the confidence that Wenger has in his distribution, in his ability to step up from the back and start play from the back. I've expressed my opinions on Callum Chambers so many times. I really like him. I'd like to see us give him a chance, because otherwise it's 16 million wasted, essentially.
I wouldn't feel confident, but I would also like to see him given a chance, just because
I mean, we'll never know otherwise.
Well, exactly, yeah.
You've got him there, so just try it. You ride or die with the decisions, and you'll get to see within 6 months of next season, right, there's a weakness. We have some money. Okay, out you go. Sorry. This is that's the one thing. It relates back to this whole point of ruthlessness that I've associated with the club, or the lack of ruthlessness. You look at Chelsea and the Conte situation. They're probably going to get rid of him. But the thing is, that's part of their success. If they're not going to be in the top four, you can pretty much guarantee next season that they're going to shake things up, and they'll be, if not comfortably within, challenging for top four.
I will go ahead and drop my opinion in here that I'm 100% confident that Callum Chambers could start in the Premier League every single week. And obviously there's going to be still some growing pains because everybody goes through it. But you can see how much he's moved up in Arsene Wenger's estimation, how many chances he's getting. And honestly, to me, I say this over and over again, I haven't seen anything that's been a red flag other than his shocker against Östersunds, which he came back and recovered from in the very next game. He hasn't had any moments where I was like, oh, that'll never work. He'll never make it because of this or that. Because he's got that composure. He's got the one-on-one solidity. He's got the confidence. And like you said, despite his distribution at Stoke, he's normally very good on the ball. So to me, those are, what else do you want in a center back to be convinced that he's Premier League quality? And honestly, I'd rather give him the starting job than go out and break the bank on some world-class defender out there that we hope will catch on, just because, I don't know, I hate to see somebody, price tag aside, I don't care how much he costs, I hate to see somebody that had so much talent that's proving himself over and over not given the proper chance. And that's why I hope that before we go jumping the gun in the summer, signing some big wig defender, that Callum Chambers gets his due, because he deserves it. He's earned every minute that he's played, and he deserves more than he's given.
I mean, if we do sign a centre back, I don't think it would be a Jose Maria Jimenez kind of centre back. I mean, if the papers and the publications are to be believed, Mislintat is looking at, again, younger centre backs. Diallo, I believe, has been mentioned numerous times. So that, again, further adds to this ideal. You need to make a decision, because otherwise someone else is going to take that position, and ideally he would hold that position down for 5-10 years or so.
Yeah, I do agree in terms of the recruitment aspect of, if Arsenal go and sign a centre-back, it has to be a player who is established, experienced and world-class now, and can come in as a 26, 27, 28-year-old and be one of the best centre-halves in the Premier League from day one, and completely so like Virgil van Dijk at Liverpool, for example, that type of player. If they go and sign another 23-year-old, 24-year-old who is a good player but may or
not
may
the finished
not
article.
Yeah, but may or may not be a great player, why not just play Callum Chambers? I don't think he's good enough to ever be a world-class centre-half, but he deserves a shot and he deserves a roll of the dice, and that's just kind of my opinion on his ability. But actually, he's been good enough so far to deserve 6 months of starting, to see if he can then build upon that.
Not to put you on the spot, but I'm curious why you don't think he can be world-class. Is there something you've seen in him that you think, well, he can't do it because of this or that, or is it just not enough, or what?
In terms of building a centre half, he has all the traits you want. You know, he's quick, he's good in the air, he's excellent on the ball, he's got good composure. Mentally, he makes some slightly odd decisions from time to time, and I think consistency is a major problem. And admittedly, that is an issue for all Arsenal players. But I think Chambers is very inconsistent, even within games. He will have a 15 to 20 minute period where he dominates his opposing striker, and then he'll have 5 minutes where he kind of just loses himself, and he'll make two or three pretty blatant errors, and then he'll recover again for 20-25 minutes. And centre half is the type of position where actually I would rather have a player who is never capable of putting in a 10 out of 10 performance, but is also never capable of putting in a 3 out of 10 performance, but will always give a 6 or 7. Whereas if you're a striker and attacker, I don't mind that fluctuation in performance, because you can create these moments out of nothing, and then maybe next week it doesn't quite happen for you. At centre-half, I think consistency is probably the most important aspect to a player's game, and that's something that I'm not sure Chambers has. Now, he's only, what is he, 23, 24?
23.
And he's not been given enough games, probably, to prove that either way, which is why I'm happy to roll the dice with him and see, can he go and be consistent for 6 months to a year? But I don't think mentally he is... he has these lapses in concentration and these weird decision-making moments that make me question whether he can be that consistent presence at the heart of the defence.
I agree with your analysis pretty much entirely, and I'm glad that you said that he hasn't been given enough games to almost prove you wrong. This is almost a glimpse of what he can do. The one thing that I would disagree with is that I don't think he's quick. I think he's adequately fast. I don't think the 5 yards, you see some players have a 5 yard turn of pace. He doesn't have that. And to be honest, most central defenders don't. But I think he's fast enough going over 20 yards. But I think even if you go back to the Jefferson Montero debacle a few years back, he beat him in the first 5 yards.
I think
I would say he's fast rather than quick. That's the only thing I would say.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's fair enough. I think at central half, you can probably get away with that.
Yeah.
At right back, that's a very different kettle of fish where, you know, the winger takes two touches just to whip a cross in, and if he can't get across in those 2 or 3 yards, then you're in trouble. But I think at centre half, that perhaps lack of, I mean, you know, Per Mertesacker is a 100 plus cap international, and Chambers has certainly got more mobility than him. It will be interesting. I think one thing is for sure, he's definitely ahead of Rob Holding in the pecking order now. I think when he was sent on loan, I think that was an indication that maybe Holding was considered higher than Chambers. And I think even at the start of the season, you saw Holding would be getting the opportunities that Chambers is now getting. Whereas I think over this year, Wenger has changed his mind on those two, and actually he now sees Chambers as the better prospect. Now Holding is I think he's about a year younger, isn't he?
Yeah.
And has obviously been at Arsenal 2 years less, something like that. So maybe there is time for improvement there, but I think for now Chambers is the third best centre half in the Arsenal squad, and that's when Mustafi and Koscielny are both fit and firing, which at the moment is rare, to be honest. The final thing we wanted to discuss about this game, Josh, I'll throw this to you first. Firstly, was the personnel on the bench. It looked very strong, but in a game that perhaps didn't matter, was that a mistake?
I mean, it's hard to say because it turned out we did need most of, or we at least Lacazette we needed. But I mean, I would have much rather seen a spattering of, at least have a few youngsters on the bench. I mean, even if you don't plan on using them, just having them there in case the game did get out of hand. I mean, I get the argument that we've been gone for 2 weeks and we've got Moscow coming up and we need to be sharp. But again, going back to my cobwebs theory about I don't know how much I buy into that they have to shake off these cobwebs every time you have an international break. I don't know why you'd have to waste isn't the right word, but use your substitutions, all of them at least, on players that should be sharp no matter how long they haven't played for. I mean, maybe that's just wishful thinking because I've seen guys like Ramsey who do have to shake off the cobwebs, but not everybody's like that. And I at least one substitution I wish would have been used to give Reece Nelson or give Eddie Nketiah a chance to just get some more game time, because I don't know. I'd hate to see. I mean, Nelson's already getting frustrated, and while I don't exactly sympathize with his frustration, I do worry that we would lose him. I mean, and the same goes with Eddie Nketiah. I worry about where he fits into this, which is why I wish he would just get as much game time as he possibly can now, which I don't know. If it's not going to come in worthless Premier League games, then when is it going to come? Because it's not going to come in the Europa League, so they might just be waiting until the summer.
I think in Nelson's case, his time might come next weekend against Southampton. I mean, if Danny Welbeck's injury is of any magnitude at all, he's probably going to miss a couple of weeks. Lacazette, then, you'd imagine, is going to start on Thursday. And then it goes back to a case of you play Aubameyang in the Premier League, Ozil, Mkhitaryan, there's another attacking spot available. Does it go to Iwobi? Maybe. But again, it's that case of, you're right, I want to see them play as well. Is it a case of where we see Joe Willock in midfield or Ainsley Maitland-Niles at one of the fullback positions simply because we want to give them a rest and that's priority? It's going to change from week to week, and it's going to change from person to person. There is no constant. There is no one correct argument in this scenario.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I certainly think I think bringing on Lacazette makes complete sense. And actually, we very rarely see Wenger make a substitution so early. And I think that was significant because he realised that Lacazette needed 20 minutes, 30 minutes to regain his sharpness and his fitness before Thursday night's game against CSKA Moscow. Did Granit Xhaka really need to come on? Probably not. Could Ainsley Maitland-Niles have been brought on for 15, 20 minutes at defence midfield? Probably. Did Mkhitaryan need to be brought on? Probably not. Could Reece Nelson or Eddie Nketiah have been brought on? Yeah, definitely. And even if you don't bring him on, even if you have them on the bench instead of, say, Alex Iwobi, and you give them the experience of going through the match day process, of being in the squad, of being in the dressing room beforehand, warming up, getting used to the Emirates, getting used to the pressure. They, you know, say there's 30 minutes to go and you say, you know, go and get them to warm up and they think, oh man, I might be coming on now. They get those kind of pre-match nerves and things like that. They're all things that players need to experience and they need to learn as young as possible so that when it does come to the real thing, they're ready. I guess it's the exact same thing as why Wenger uses the League Cup early in the year, because really they're relatively meaningless competitions. He uses them to bleed young players. I would like to see him take the same perspective with the Premier League, and I think you, Josh, and probably you, Henry, as well, are of the same thinking. Whether that comes with all of these players or whether that comes with the odd one here and there, and you kind of, you know, you rotate depending on the week and depending on the midweek fixtures and stuff like that, then maybe. But there's still seven games to go, so hopefully Wenger will at least bleed these youngsters a little bit more than he has been in recent weeks.
And, you know, even if you just use one of the substitutions on Eddie Nketiah, then at least Reece Nelson, Joe Willock look and say, well, that could be me next time. I mean, if they're sitting there and they're seeing only senior players getting sent in, the same guys that are playing every single week, even when it doesn't matter, then you start to doubt. I mean, you start to think, well, maybe I'm never really going to get my chance. And even that smallest introduction of doubt worries me, because I feel like that's, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but I really did like what Marcus McGuane brought to the team, and he just saw that he wasn't going to get a chance because Joe Willock was getting all the chances in front of him. And I don't want that doubt to start setting in with these young players this early in their Arsenal careers, because there's so much potential there that it would be... I mean, even we're seeing McGuane making inroads, I mean, small inroads at Barcelona, but that's the kind of thing I really fear seeing with Nelson potentially leaving and Nketiah leaving, is, you know, these opportunities that they weren't given could be the difference. It could be that final push over the edge of them seeing that they're not going to get a chance. And I would hate for that to happen in a meaningless game like that we had against Stoke.
I mean, I'd just like to see Matt Macy start over David Ospina. As if David Ospina is not going to be here past next year, I don't think so.
No, to be honest, I would like to see me start over David Ospina, but that's more that's more for quality issues rather than just potential problems. And I'm about 5'7", so I'm not big enough to be a goalkeeper, and I'd still rather see me. I genuinely think I would have more command of my area than David Ospina. This is ridiculous. when he got caught under the corner by Shaqiri.
It was just a flap, wasn't it? It was just helpless, wasn't it?
I'm worried. I'm very worried that Arsenal are going to get to maybe say the semi-finals or the final of the Europa League. Wenger's going to continue with his goalkeeper rotation, and it's really going to come back and bite him in the bum. Just, you know, Ospina's going to, you know when he played Chesney in the League Cup final when he wasn't ready in 2011, and he had an absolute stinker for Obafemi Martins' goal.
Oh, stop it! I remember the goal. Stop it.
I have a fear that a very similar thing may happen with David Ospina in the Europa League this year. But
I mean, it might just be a case of maybe Petr Cech didn't actually have a groin injury, so that they could change this rotation. David Ospina is going to start all the Premier League games now and check the Europa League games.
It's too sensible for Wenger to do, but there we go. I think we've exhausted this Stoke game, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, no, go on, Josh.
I don't think we really discussed the Stoke games. I think it was just issues that kind of developed from the Stoke game.
I did have one other question from the Stoke game, and that's simply, why doesn't Hector Bellerin run anymore? He would take the ball, and he would cross midfield, and then he would just stop. There could be all the space in the world, and he would just stop and start looking for somebody. And again, I forget who the commentators were, but they kept saying, well, just run. Just keep running. You're faster than everyone else out there. But he takes a little jog and then stops and starts looking for Ozil to bail him out. He hasn't even made it into a dangerous area where he's got to worry. And I don't know. There was, I think, one time where he made it to the opposing corner, and I was celebrating. I was like, "Well, you made it. You went all the way there. Good for you." And that's what he should be doing all the time. But I don't know.
It's just a case for me. That's why I loved Oxlade-Chamberlain as that right wing back or that right winger. Every time he got the ball in 5-10 yards of space, I was sat on the edge of my seat going, right, he's going to run at someone here. And Garen, fair enough, something wasn't always going to develop from that, but I thought something was more likely to happen with Oxlade-Chamberlain on that ball in that position rather than Hector Bellerin, who, as you said, very rarely even tries to beat him. You've got to put it in the defender's mind that you can beat him. Even if it doesn't work, you've got to have him second-guessing. Not just, all right, he's stationary now. I can switch off who's around.
Yeah.
I don't miss Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, though.
I had very similar thoughts on Theo Walcott. Whenever he used to get the ball, he would never actually drive at a defender. And I don't think Bellerin is as good a dribbler as Chamberlain and Walcott, but like you said, you've got to put that element of doubt into the defender's mind of saying, well, he could, even if it's a case of just knocking the ball to the right and flinging in a cross and getting that 2 or 3 yards of space, just being able to put that doubt into the defender's mind creates space for other people.
I mean, it just goes to show that different players fit different systems better than others, and different positions and different tactics. I mean, I just said I didn't miss him. That's a blatant lie. He was one of my favourite players. But I would love, if Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain was still here, he wouldn't be playing in central midfield in our system. He'd be playing as a right back because that's where he fits best in our system. He hasn't improved as a player. He just fits their system better. I hate the argument that they bring. He's a better player. No, he's not. He's just whipped in a couple of set pieces and he's ran into space. Well done.
But knowing Arsene Wenger, he would start Bellerin ahead of Oxlade-Chamberlain every single match.
Well, he would start Oxlade-Chamberlain on the left for no good reason whatsoever.
Yeah, he'd play left back. Yeah. Right, let's take a break, and when we come back, we will preview Thursday's game that we've essentially been talking about a lot anyway, but we'll officially preview Thursday's game against CSKA Moscow, the first leg in the quarterfinals of the Europa League. See you in just a moment. And welcome back to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name's Andrew. I'm with Henry and Josh as usual. And we are going to review Thursday night's game against CSKA Moscow.
Review?
I'll be honest. Yes, I'll hold my hand up. I know pretty much nothing about CSKA Moscow, apart from they used to be good on FIFA a few years ago. So, Josh, we'll come to you first. What can you tell us about the Russians?
Well, I can tell you that they were in the Champions League. They got knocked out. Their last game was a 2-1 loss to United, which seems respectable, though I know nothing else about that game. They are in third place in the Russian Premier League, which seems a bit low, given that I always place them as, at name value at least, to be the top in Russia. But then again, I've never followed the Russian game that much, other than knowing a tad bit about CSKA Moscow and that they occasionally make the Champions League.
Who is first and second in the Russian league?
Zenit and
Zenit maybe,
and Lokomotiv Moscow is first.
Lokomotiv
and Spartak.
How many teams are in Moscow?
Apparently three. Oh, there's another one. It looks like four. Anyways,
this is a complete aside. I did see on Twitter that the world's longest away game
in
terms of
too.
Distance was at the weekend. And do you know what the score was?
0-0.
0-0.
You travelled 12,000 miles.
It's from kind of one end of Russia to the other end of Russia. This is why I thought it's in Russia. From one end of Russia to the other end of Russia, it was a 0-0. Anyway, sorry, you were excelling us in the virtues of CSKA Moscow.
Moscow football.
I know that they have some talented individuals. They have Alan Jagov, I'm probably saying that wrong, But when he was first linked to Arsenal, the first thing I did was get on FIFA and buy him, and I was drastically disappointed because he did not fulfill what I was looking for in FIFA, and I had to reload my game and unbuy
him. The combination
of
pace and acceleration and agility that you were looking for.
Yeah, he wasn't the everything player that the tabloids often tout people to be. And that's about as much as I know about this wonderful club from Russia. I know that there's going to be tension because of politics and stuff.
Yes, there will be. He did. Alan Zagoev, I think it was Euros 2012. He looked really good for Russia.
Yeah, but he wasn't good on FIFA, so...
But he wasn't good on FIFA, which means he can't possibly be good in real life. Yeah. Henry, what facts can you provide us about this wonderful football team?
I mean, I'm glad Josh didn't take all the ones that I'd learned. I mean, I know they have Ahmed Musa, who was brilliant on FIFA, seeing as if we're going to continue with the FIFA theme. I know they beat Lyon in the last round of the Europa League on away goals, 3-3 on aggregates. And there, Lyon have got some fantastic players. Memphis Depay has had a bit of a renaissance since leaving Manchester for France. But otherwise...
Future Arsenal attacker Nabil Fekir is on the team as well.
Yeah, off 50 of his goals this year.
I know Iga Akinfeev, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, is their goalkeeper who had that really awful record of not holding a clean sheet in the Champions League for years and years and years. But other than that, I know nothing about them besides the fact that the Berezutsky brothers are there and they're defenders, and I can just imagine them being bold, nasty defenders.
I can imagine the exact same. I do think really I put it this way: Arsenal should be beating CSKA Moscow.
Yes.
In reality, if they don't beat CSKA Moscow, then serious questions need to be asked of this team and this manager, and the club in general, because this should be a game that they win, even with the travel incorporated into it. That you know, and with the political tensions, like you said, Josh, and there is a context about this game that perhaps makes it more than just the quality on the pitch. But even with that factored in, Arsenal should still be winning this game and they should still be progressing to the semi-finals of the Europa League. Do you think they will, Josh, first and foremost, on aggregate, obviously?
Of course I do. Of course they're going to win. And it's going to be... I imagine it'll be much more conclusive than even AC Milan was, which I think was pretty conclusive. I always have this belief that Arsenal are their best when they need to be, which has been proven wrong so many times, but I still believe it for whatever reason. I can't picture a scenario where it's more important for them to be at their best than in the Europa League, as they're clinging to dear life to get back in the Champions League. So yeah, I think they're going to win. I think they're going to do it completely. Bless you.
Thank you.
Bless you, Henry. Do you think Arsenal are going to win over the two legs as well?
Yeah, I mean, you say that we should win, but I've said this previously as well, we should have beaten Monaco. So this is the time where I hope the complacency that we've previously discussed doesn't come to the fore, and that we just do a job, do a professional job, which seems so rare. But I'm confident, because you should be when you think that you have the superior team and the superior players.
Yeah, I am. I'm oddly confident as well. It's a very weird feeling. How do you think Wenger will set up on Thursday? Do you think it will be a team very similar to Milan, or do you think he has a couple of surprises in store for us?
I think he'll revert to a team that was similar to the one that faced AC Milan. You may see Petr Cech start. I'm not sure, but you may see... Ospina might be in goal. Lacazette, I would expect to start now, considering his impressive cameo and Welbeck's voyage down the tunnel following his substitution. But other than that, I'd expect Xhaka to return to the starting lineup as well. Monreal to continue at left back. Kshalny to come in for Chambers. Bellerin to keep his hold of the right back position. Yeah, pretty standard.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Do you agree, Josh?
Yeah, I'd love to say wholeheartedly that I believe that Lacazette will start, but with Arsene Wenger being Arsene Wenger, I just always wonder if there's not something else he has in mind to spare Lacazette the stress. But I actually think in this situation, I think that he will go with Lacazette, and I think he should, because if we're looking for that game changer, I think that Lacazette's got every reason in the world to be that, because he...
I think if this was in Russia, he would go with Welbeck, personally.
Or Nketiah, depending on the injury.
But I think the fact that it's at home, I think you're right. Arsenal will dominate the ball, and he will go with Lacazette.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I'm excited for that, because Lacazette, I have to imagine, it is just dying to get back out there and make a difference for this team, because he hasn't had a good streak in literally months. He's been really struggling, and I mean, I don't want to downplay Moscow, because obviously they've quality enough to get this far, but I wouldn't consider them the Premier League opposition that Lacazette had been struggling against for so long. I would consider them a step below that. And at the Emirates, he's fresh back from injury. I could see him having a big game.
I hope so. I hope you are correct. The last thing I want to talk about really is a piece that I'm in the middle of writing. So by the time you probably hear this, it's probably been on the site for a bit. Essentially, for this first leg, I believe that the clean sheet is the most important thing, primarily because of the away goals. We saw Jose Mourinho against Seville very stupidly go away from home and play for a 0-0 draw. Usually going away from home against a good team and play for a 0-0 draw is perfectly acceptable. In Europe, in knockout competitions where it's over two legs, it's very stupid, because you need to get that away goal. The away goal was really important. If you can keep a clean sheet at home, you're halfway to winning that tie.
Yeah.
For me, on Thursday night, I think Arsenal being able to keep that clean sheet is the most important thing that they can do. If they draw 0-0, I don't think that's a bad result at all, because I think they can go to Moscow and score. Clearly, I think this is a game that they should be winning, and I think it's a game that they can go and win 2-0, maybe even 3-0 if they play really well. But I think the nil is the most important aspect of that scoreline. Not if, you know, if they go and win 3-2, then actually that is a little bit of a precarious situation just because of the away goals rule. Is that something that you would buy into, or do you see it a bit differently?
I'd buy into that for sure.
I'm a little bit more hesitant just because I don't know how much I trust Arsenal to go into Moscow without a goal to their name and having to win that game, because it's a hell of a lot more pressure than just, I don't know. I think I would take a 3-2 win over a 0-0 draw. I want an advantage going into Moscow. I want a lead going in, because I don't trust them. I've been fooled too many times to trust that they can do what needs to be done when it needs to be done.
No, that's fair enough. Is there anything that we need to discuss on this game, fellas?
Score predictions.
Andy, I'd like to... Andy, I know, is an expert in Russian football, so I'd like to hear his...
I know almost nothing about CSKA Moscow. I know that they're in Moscow, which is the capital of Russia, I think.
What does the CSKA stand for, Andy?
Ooh.
That's a good pub quiz question, isn't it?
Kremlin begins with a K, doesn't it? So that's probably the K. A is going to be association. S could be soccer. And C could probably be corrupt if it's Russia. So the Corrupt Soccer Kremlin Association.
I actually have what it stands for, and it's actually strange. I mean, obviously, it's lost in translation a bit, but it's their actual name is PFC CSKA Moscow, which is PFC Central Sport Club of the Army Moscow, which sounds really militant more than actually.
Gosh.
But their stadium only has 30,000 seats, so that's what that's worth. I don't.
I prefer the Corrupt Soccer Association, personally. I think it's a much, much better name for
them. I mean, that's a great pub quiz question, along with who are the three Americans to have represented Arsenal in the first team. I've looked this up recently, so I know it.
Danny Carbassian.
That's one.
I'm guessing Kalen Carr. No.
No.
No, he never did. Gedeon Zalalem did, didn't he?
Yes, he has.
Who would the third one be?
I mean, you're the American, Josh. I'm just putting that
I know,
out.
I'm trying to think who the third one could possibly be, and I'm...
From what period?
He is from around about the same period as Danny Carbasayun. He actually went on to have a really good career in the lower leagues of the English football system with Carlisle and Sheffield Wednesday.
I'm going to hate myself when I hear this because I know
it. It's not Simek, is it?
Yeah.
Frankie Simek, yeah. Yes.
You've Frankie definitely Simek. Just looked that up on the internet.
I genuinely have not looked that up. The only reason why I know that is because I am from Sheffield and most of my mates are Wednesday fans, and the only American Wednesday player who I have ever heard of is Frankie Simek. So there we go.
He actually captained the Arsenal reserves.
Or I could claim that my Arsenal knowledge is that ridiculous that I remember Frankie Simek playing for Arsenal 15 years ago, however long it was.
Yeah, he captained the reserve team, made one appearance. But yeah,
made one appearance. Well, I mean, I remember it well. I was there. score prediction, Henry. What do you think the score will be on Thursday night?
I'm gonna go.
And we'll also go aggregate score as well.
I'll say 3-0, and then 6-0.
Oh my gosh! Seriously?
No, I'll go 3-0 and then 5-0.
So you don't think CSK Moscow will score?
No. we'll go 4-1 then on aggregate.
Right, okay. So 3-0 and a 1-1.
Yeah, why not?
Josh,
I think we'll do 3-0 here, and then I think we'll do 2-1 in Moscow.
Win or loss?
Win, sorry.
So you're going 5-4.
Yes, absolutely.
Go on, Andy. Back it. Right.
I describe myself as fairly confident for this, but I'm not in the same stratosphere as what I would call cockiness as you two.
Hey!
I think Arsenal will win 2-1 on Thursday, and I think they will win, draw 1-1 in Moscow. I think it will actually be relatively comfortable. I think they will score. They'll go 1-0 up in Moscow, and with that away goal, where CSK then need to score 2, and actually it will be a fairly comfortable 3-2 aggregate win.
Okay,
that was far too detailed for it ever to be correct.
Yeah.
But there we go. I think we're there, fellas. Are we there?
I'm ready for this Champions League action tonight.
Yes. Yeah, Juve Real. It's going to be a fantastic game. And then Liverpool Man City tomorrow. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Especially our recent ramblings. I hope to any Russians listening that we have not offended you. I apologise if that is the case. We will see you... when do we next one do a podcast? Friday?
Yeah.
Saturday?
Yeah, either one. Why not?
Yep, yep. So we will speak to you next after the Moscow game. Of course it will be a victory. It will never not be a victory. We will be speaking to you in much better spirits than this time. Goodbye.